This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And good morning. Welcome to The Gardening Show. We are live. It's 8:30 and we are glad to be with you on another, well, chilly, quite frankly, and wet and soggy day, Bob.
Yeah, how about that? Gee.
I'm Igor. With me, as always, Master Gardener Bob Harris. And thanks to Worth W. Smith Hardware, our sponsor today. And, well, what's on your mind?
Okay. I wanted to cover, because this has been bugging me for a while. I wanted to cover some of the hacks, gardening hacks.
Okay. Yeah, there's always on the internet, you see the headline, hey, yeah. 5 easy hacks to make a better garden.
Yeah.
Are you telling us those are just to get clicks?
I think so.
Uh-oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Especially the first one really drives me crazy. To kill weeds, that home remedy of vinegar, soap, and salt mixed together to destroy weeds. Yes, it will destroy a weed. And it'll destroy the ground in that area also. And what's even worse is, because we know this very well here in our part of the country, it destroys concrete.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because it's an acid.
Oh, okay.
The vinegar and salt. Yeah. So those people that are trying to get rid of those weeds in the cracks of their patio, concrete patio, or their Unilock patio, or even blacktop, they're doing more damage than good. Yeah, you're probably getting rid of the weeds, but you are etching. We call it etching that concrete. It's taking off that protective top layer. It's kind of the skin of the concrete, and it's exposing the concrete to the weather, so it'll start to rot faster and faster, as we know with our potholes around here in the winter.
Is there anything to the third ingredient in there? So we have the vinegar and the salt that's bad. What about the soap? Is there anything to that, or is that just thrown in there for good measure?
That's just thrown in there to make it all stick together longer.
To damage your lawn even more.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's out.
Yeah, and of course, pouring it just in the ground. Let's say you even have a fence, one of those metal fence with the metal poles, and you apply it there. What does acid do to metal? It makes it rot. And also, it does kill the weed, but it gets into that soil and kills the earthworms and kills all the life in the soil. What you've accomplished is a desert.
Unless if that's what you're going after, by all means.
Yeah.
No, don't do that. All right.
But yeah, just think about it with your concrete driveways and patios and sidewalks. You know, maybe there's better products out there.
So that first hack's out. What is there? What's better to use instead? Is there a home remedy?
No, there's no home remedy.
You just go. You
besides
have to get the,
pulling the weeds, or
getting the pro stuff at the store.
Yeah, or a good string trimmer.
Ah,
you know, after you, if you keep up with it with a string trimmer, you'll eventually kill those weeds in that area by just the fact that they just run out of steam because you don't let them grow, and so. A string trimmer or the products you can buy in the store that are meant to kill weeds. Another one is, I know I'm going to make a lot of people upset.
Uh-oh.
Landscape fabric to keep the weeds out. So they don't let landscape fabric, as it has set there for a year or two, all those little holes that are supposed to let water through and gases out, they all plug up. So now what you've got is a solid barrier over the top of your plants. The roots start to die underneath, and they'll develop new roots on top of the fabric.
Okay.
Many weeds can still penetrate the fabric, or the weed seeds that blow in. Most weeds, you know, grow from a seed. They blow in, sit on top of the fabric. They're well protected. And then they start to grow in your mulch. Not only does the soil particles plug those little holes that are supposed to be drainage holes, but also fungus. And we all have fungus, and it's a good thing, all through our ground. They start to plug up all those holes. So that fabric blocks off the water getting to the soil and the air and the gases getting out of the soil. I've seen this happen before, and I got to admit it. Way back when the landscape fabric was first invented, I was using it, and I put it on the landscape and was really proud of it. And I cut the little holes in there or the X's, fold back the flaps so you can plant in there. Years later, that same person called me and said, geez, all my shrubs don't look good, Bob. And so I said, well, let me come check it out. And the first shrub I came to, I basically just touched it and it fell over.
Oh, no.
So as I dug it up, I could see that the whole root ball had rotted and new roots had developed over the top of the fabric, which wasn't enough to hold up a 5 and 6 foot tall shrub anymore. So it just fell right over.
Oh dear. Now, if the situation was a little bit different, do you think the roots would have eventually found its way to penetrate the fabric again and get where they need to go?
Yeah. Okay. 'Cause the fabric will rot away eventually. But it'll take years and years to do that. Or the roots will be able to poke holes through that fabric and eventually get there.
Because, now, of course, I put it down with my shrubs, with my arborvitae.
Okay.
Big things. And then they're doing good. They're doing great. But those were already, like, pretty big. They were already, 3 feet. And then I put the big root ball underground.
Yeah.
And then the fabric over it. So that probably helped me in my case.
Yeah. And it's not 100% going to kill off your shrubs. Now, there's been a lot of successful landscape fabric installations, too. It all depends on how you do it. Make that opening very wide where you're going to plant the shrub. Don't make it cut a little slit and try to put that shrub or that plant in that little slit. That's where damage is going to occur.
So basically, after a while, the weeds make their way through it anyway, you said. So
yeah, they do.
Don't waste your time and money, you're saying, right?
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Yeah. Just a good thick layer of mulch is going to do the job for you.
And it would look nice, and you're probably going to do that anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
And it's going to become more beneficial because as that mulch rots down, it becomes part of your soil.
Right.
But if there's a barrier there, like landscape fabric, then it can't work its way down into the soil to feed the roots of those plants. So
that was the second home remedy.
Yeah,
that's,
second.
Or a gardening hack, if you will.
Another one, and this one kind of hits me because this is what my grandmother always did.
Uh-oh.
To add a little Epsom salts in the bottom of a planting hole, thinking that the plants need magnesium. And they do need magnesium. But our soils in Bradford are full of magnesium, and they'll probably never run out of magnesium. The only place where they have to add magnesium is in real intensive agricultural fields where they're growing crop after crop after crop. They may become depleted of a lot of the fertilizers like magnesium sulfate. So, what that salt does, it dries out the plant roots, stops that plant from penetrating deeper because it doesn't want
to get
salt.
It's getting away from the salt, sure.
So, I don't want to go on too much about it, but Epsom salts, and like I said again, most of our soils are full of magnesium, so we don't have to add magnesium. Another big one for me is native plants. Everybody wants to plant native plants. And you could argue this with me, but my feeling is our yards are not a native site. Because when we've built the home, we've come in there with bulldozers and so on, scraped all the topsoil, chopped all the trees and shrubs down. No longer is it native. The soil has changed. The life that's in the soil has changed. There's not as much life in the soil anymore. So, and it's a proven fact that a lot of pollinators have grown to love our non-native plants because they flower a little bit more, they produce more nectar, they make better home sites. The natives, they struggle because we've planted them in a non-native site, our yard. So they struggle. They don't produce as flowers as well as they did when they were out in the nature.
Okay. Now, we have a phone call here.
Okay.
814-368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. And it's about kind of the same topic here. He wants to know about trees that are usually found in California, I believe, those big trees. Let's go to the phones.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming back for another year.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hey, what is your opinion of maybe getting a sequoia tree for here?
The sequoia?
Did you read that article in the paper?
What did it say? The sequoia will survive here?
They're transplanting them around the country. Now, apparently they're taking them and they're getting whatever they do. They're not like a seed.
Oh, they're doing cuttings.
Something like a cutting or grafting.
Okay.
And I thought, geez, Mr. Tree should know about that.
You know, now that I think back, I did read that article, but I would still be leery because there's a good alternative, the Dawn Redwood tree. Now, they're related.
Yeah.
And now that grows very, very well in Bradford. The sequoia, you know, that's a risk. The redwood tree. The Mesa Sequoia, the Dawn Redwood, is guaranteed to grow here and grow rapidly here.
Do we have any growing around here?
Yeah, we sure do.
Where?
Well, my backyard, for one. But you'll find them at Graham's Greenhouse, too. And I've seen some very, very old ones outside of Bradford, even north of Bradford. And I say they're a very long-lived and a very fast-growing tree, and there's no leaf cleanup because they have needles. And they're an odd needle tree because they drop all their needles every winter, but it's not a thing that you have to clean up because they're real fine and they rot away quickly.
You know, for years I rake leaves.
Uh-huh.
I got a little older. And last year I started, and this year I left them down.
Okay.
I didn't take care of them. My grass is greener this year than I think it's been in a long time. It looks healthy. I'm thinking, you know, all those years I raked, what a fool.
Well, the leaves are full of carbon, and all life depends on carbon. So if you don't have a huge amount of leaves, then it's very beneficial to leave them. Now, the rest of us usually use a mulching lawnmower, mulch up the leaves.
And that's what I started to do.
Yeah. And so you don't have to collect them if you can mulch them up. But if it's piling up to where it gets a few inches deep and then hides the grass, of course, the grass can't get sunlight, so then it suffers.
The bad part of it is the neighbor's got some, too, and his new neighbor.
Yeah.
And he hired somebody to take care of his leaves.
Yeah.
So the young kid blew all the leaves over in my yard.
Oh.
I come home and they were all over in my yard.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you got all that wonderful carbon from that. So who has the last laugh now? Your lawn looks greener than ever.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But I read that article, and the minute I read it, I thought of you, and I thought, going to have to get in touch with him and see what he thinks.
Yeah, I don't think the science is there for the Bradford area yet to put the money into a redwood tree when we can have a facsimile from the Dawn redwood.
Well, and we're doing quite well with our black cherry and those things, too.
Yes.
Well, hey, thanks for your time, and hey, thanks, WESB, for bringing him back.
Oh, yeah. We love having Bob here. Thank you so much for listening. You take care now.
Yeah, have a good day.
Can't keep you away, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Anything to add?
Yeah. And that's another one of those hacks. Well, you'll see people claim to have developed other plants that traditionally didn't grow in this area, but now they say will, you know, and I'd be very, very leery of it. I know they have a lot of ways of producing hardier, we call it hardier, root stocks and hardier plants that they say will grow in our area. But and some of them can fool us, and they may grow for a year or two, and then all of a sudden they die off because that once every, I don't know, every 10 years, we get a really severe winter, you know.
Yeah.
And those plants die off, and that's really depressing then.
Yeah.
We have plenty of native-type plants in this area that will grow and survive, and if I'm going to put my money into a tree or a shrub, I'm going to make sure it's going to survive not only 10 years, but I want it to survive a lifetime. So I'm going to put my money into native ones or proven ones.
Sure. Okay. Do you have more hacks to get to? Because we're going to thank
That was it.
That
for
was the last
hacks.
Hack.
Yep.
The myths. Okay. So we're going to take a short break. We'll thank our sponsor at Worth W. Smith,
okay.
And then we'll come back and we'll have some show and tell. You brought some plants in.
Yeah.
We'll show it on Facebook Live, and we'll be back with more of your phone calls, and we'll be right back here on the Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.
Spring has sprung. It's time to get your gardening underway with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. Start with their big selection of garden seeds and fertilizers to grow all your favorite vegetables and flowers. Build attractive planting beds and landscape edging with railroad ties from Worth W. Smith. Dress it up with the popular black pearl mulch and add bags of landscape stone and pavers to finish it off. You'll be the envy of your neighborhood. It's time to get started. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And just like that, we're back to more Gardening Show on B107.5 FM, facebook.com/WESB1075. You can comment on there, on the video, if you have something to ask Bob. And of course, the old-fashioned way, as you just heard, we have our phone lines open at 814-368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. What else is on your mind today, Bob?
Before I get on to the plants, I, for some reason, I was just thinking of this year. I used to work at Graham's Greenhouse many, many years ago. And at that time, it was run by the elder Graham, Malcolm Graham, Malcolm and Bob Graham. Super, super intelligent man. And one of his sayings, because this holds true for this year, was you can always add water, but you can never take it away. Mm. He must have said that 1,000 times, you know. And this year is, so far, is a good one. I know some people have container plants. I'm one of them myself. And so with all this wet and cool weather, it's just a good reminder to me that water them and kind of let them go there till they really dry out, because probably the rain or the dews or just the cold is going to keep them wet for a long period of time. And so we got to watch our watering very closely.
Okay. All right. Very good advice.
I brought some plants along today, and I'll start out with coleus.
Coleus. Now, coleus. These are plants to just put around the house, or?
No. Yeah. For this is an annual.
Okay.
That you would plant. And an annual is a plant that only survives one growing season, not like a perennial. Perennial like a tree, you know, a tree is a perennial that grows for 100 years. And this is a coleus. Now, it's not known for its flower. It will flower, but I always suggest just snip off that flower when you see it. But it's known for its beautiful foliage. It's very attractive that way. But also, this is in what they call a four-pack. So I wanted to show you, how do you remove a plant that's in a four-pack. because if you just grabbed it and tried to pull it out, you're probably going to do some damage to it. So you hold the four pack, put a finger right underneath it, and push up, and that will release it. Then you can grab it as low on the stem as possible, and then you can slowly wiggle it out. And there you removed it without any damage at all. And so I'm going to take it a little bit further. Well, you might have trouble seeing this, but
put it closer to the camera.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. That's good.
It has roots that are all at the outside of the plant. So when after you pull it out, just grab a hold of some of them roots and pluck a few off.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, they can tend to continue in a circular motion.
Direction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes it hard for the plant to really grow and thrive.
So just kind of pluck off the bottom a little bit.
Yeah, pluck off the bottom, break up some of them roots, so that now they'll start to search out into the soil, become a bigger root mass, and that going to mean a bigger, better plant. So that's the coleus.
Okay, and remember to pop out from the bottom. You push your thumb up under those little plastic squares, and it'll pop out easier when you grab it low.
That's right.
Okay.
So I'll even show you on a potted plant. This is a lantana. Hummingbirds, I brought a couple of these in just for the hummingbirds and butterflies. This one here is really going to draw the hummingbirds in a hurry. Very small flowers on it and a long calyx, they call it. So the nectar's way down deep inside, so only a hummingbird or bumblebee with a long tongue can get in there, or moss. And so that's a great one. Of course, that likes a real hot, dry area. I'm going to remove the tag and remove the plant. Now, with a potted plant, what we want to do is put our fingers over the surface of the pot, then tap on the bottom.
Okay, so you have it turned all the way upside down right now.
And maybe you have to squeeze it a little bit to loosen that how the roots have adhered to the bottom, and give it a tap, and it starts to come out.
Oh, look at that.
Now I have it out. And again, I'm going to pinch off some of them roots that are circling all the way around, maybe scratch one side or two, and now it's ready to plant. This one's real dry, so another clue, too, don't plant a dry plant. Water your plants before you plant them. It's going to be very, very helpful.
And how long should they enjoy that water before you plant them?
Oh, just a couple minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's all.
I didn't know if you meant like, you know, saturate them the night before and then you plant them. But no, you don't have to do that much.
Wow, mess.
You made a mess.
Yeah, like always. So
we'll
water your plant.
We'll send you our cleaning bill.
Okay. water your plant before you plant it. Make sure your soil is damp, too. A lot of the soil.
I don't think that's a problem right now.
Oh, yeah. But if we're just filling a container, we're opening up that bag and dumping it in there, and that soil's dry. And it can be very difficult to get wet down into the root area of the plant. So try to dampen your soil, too. Another one, you know, and one of my favorites, I got to clean it up a little bit, petunias. Great, great plant for the hummingbirds because, again, that real long neck like a trumpet. And the hummingbirds, that nectar will be there because hardly any other pollinator can get to that nectar. So it'll draw the hummingbirds in very well. And they can spread quite wide. I like to always say, you know, one petunia is worth three or four other plants because they can get 2 to 3 foot wide.
Nice.
Or in a hanging basket, 2 to 3 foot down.
Wow.
So great plant for covering a large area with only one plant. This is salvia. And salvia is known as the best hummingbird plant. Because they're full of nectar, they bloom all season. They also have a way of protecting that nectar, so only moths, butterflies, and hummingbirds can get to it. So the salvia, and there's a lot of different salvias, are a real good one for attracting those hummingbirds.
And that one's more of a vertical, it looks like a violet kind of thing popping up.
Yeah, yeah. Real purplish, dark purple flower on it. It's really very pretty. And it does have a nice scent to it, too. I got to sweep up a little
bit. Oh, you're fine. Get that after the show. You're good. It's not hurting anything. A little dirt. The gardener's worried about dirt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this time of year, though, you know, you still can't. And I did this yesterday. Planted some of my containers. Can't wait anymore. If the threat of frost comes, I'll bring them real close to the house, or I'll cover them either way. Yeah, I highly recommend you go out. There's a good selection of plants, so now's the time to go out there and choose your plants and try to choose some that will help attract those pollinators like the hummingbird and the butterflies.
But not the bumblebees.
Well, yeah. I know. We still got to support the bumblebees.
I know. The bees are good.
Yeah, bees are good. The one bee, though, that is not good, if I got time.
You got time. We have about 4 minutes, okay. Bob. All the time in the world.
Is the carpenter bee.
Oh, gosh,
and yes. We're seeing more and more and more of them. A carpenter bee likes to find any wooden structure, and it tunnels in. And then it'll lay that one egg in there, and then that will develop, and now you've got another carpenter bee. They can do a lot of damage, so keep your eye open for that. And that's one bee that I would have no trouble destroying.
Yeah. Now, I wonder if there's any kind of natural, is there any kind of scent a plant that they don't like to chase them away, or they
not,
just...
Not that I know of.
Nothing, you know, good.
Not that I know of.
Okay. Wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah.
How do you naturally deter them? You don't.
There are mason bees, or carpenter bees they're called. There are traps that you can put up that they'll go to. There are other items, and this is a hack, but
yeah.
I have seen it work, and it's okay, I guess. You can take a paper bag, brown paper bag, you crumple it up and stuff plastic bags inside. So it kind of looks like a wasp nest.
Okay.
And you can hang that up.
Wow.
The carpenter bees don't like wasps, so they stay away from that area. Of course, that nest doesn't like wind and rain either, so it can end up... in your yard floating around, too.
So build a decoy nest, basically.
Yeah,
a fake
yeah.
wasp nest, and then they'll potentially stay away. But then you have to look at that.
Yeah, it's not a pretty sight, especially if Bob made it. But there are carpenter bee traps, and a lot of people can make their own that work very well. And So be on the lookout for that, because a lot of our fascia and wooden parts of our house, you may see all those holes will be about 3/8 of an inch. So you could put your baby finger in there. Don't do that.
No. But hey, here's a new hole in my house. Let me stick my finger in and see what happens.
And if you let them go over time, the population's going to build and build, and you're going to have lots and lots of holes in your house or barn or any structure. So be aware of that, that's a bee that you can destroy.
All right, very good. And any parting words? We have about a minute left in the show.
Just remember, you can always add water, but you can never take it away.
There you go. Very good. And then, of course, we have to acknowledge Memorial Day.
Yes.
Monday. So
yes.
Happy Memorial Day. Remember why we celebrate. Thank you so much to those who have served and have given up the ultimate sacrifice to help our freedom.
Darn right.
Any advice real quick about planting flowers in the cemetery real quick?
Yeah, there are plants that just do well in the cemetery, like geraniums and the wax leaf begonias and Dusty Miller. I know they're old-fashioned, but they're old-fashioned and still there because they work. You can plant them, water them in, and basically walk away, and most of the time they're going to be fine in our area.
They just work. Again, yep. Those were called?
Geraniums, waxleaf begonias, Dusty Miller, Ageratum or Ageratum, however you want to say it. That's another one. Those are all plants that The animals seem to leave alone, and they can withstand extremes and weather.
Wonderful. Thank you very much again. This has been The Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith Hardware. We'll talk to you again next week, Bob.
Okay.